Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend edition. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. Now, just as a note to all of our podcast listeners, we have gone to a different distribution network through podcasting. So if you haven't been getting some of our podcasts, please email us. Let us know what provider you use for downloading your podcast, and we'll make sure that we can update all that information. Let's get right into this show, because this week it was all about waiting for the Fed meeting and statement, and then also the GDP numbers out of the U.S. We're kicking off this show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, we are recording this later in the day on Wednesday, so we have the Fed statement and press conference behind us. We got that 75 basis point rate hike, which it seemed like the market was very much expecting. Muted movements after the initial statement, but then during the press conference, we really started to see assets, financial assets, move higher. The U.S. markets, they all popped higher. Metals popped higher, the U.S. dollar dropped. That was really the takeaway from a lot of the markets and the moves immediately post the Fed. Now, undoubtedly, we're going to get some volatility continuing to the end of the week. But Jesse, it was all about the press conference that started to move these markets. What did you take away from the press conference? What Jerome Powell said that really pushed investors back into stocks?
Well, what has really had markets freaked out over the last couple of months is this hawkish pivot at the Fed from, you know, believing and espousing that inflation was transitory to, okay, it's not transitory. Now we need to get serious. And at the June meeting, I think Jay Powell made it very clear that they were willing to do whatever it took to bring inflation back down. You know, if that means recession, so be it. If that means an unemployment rate going significantly higher, so be it. They have to address the stable prices side of the mandate over everything else. And so I think the markets, that was why markets started pricing in 100 basis points for this meeting and started believing that the Fed was going to be a lot more hawkish than markets had actually priced in to that point. Now, this meeting was a departure from that language in every respect. I think Jay Powell made it very clear that they were going to no longer provide any forward guidance. That was very clear. That, when asked about the next rate hike in September, they said they're going to be data dependent. We're not going to guide you to 75 basis points or 100 basis points like they did by leaking to the Wall Street Journal recently and et cetera. We're not going to guide you. We're going to be data dependent. And that's going to leave them some flexibility to do another 75 basis points if they need to, or to, you know, do something less if the, you know, economic data comes in weak over the next couple of months. So, you know, there was that. There was the clear statement. He was asked about, you know, what level of unemployment would get you, you know, to pivot. And he basically was pretty clear in saying, you know, we want to try and bring inflation down without having a recession, without unemployment going up too much. That was a big departure from saying we're going to do whatever it takes to bring down inflation. Clearly, they're not willing to allow unemployment to go up by a certain amount. You know, it sounds very clear that they believe they're now at neutral with the Fed funds rate. They want to take it into restrictive territory. But again, he said at some point they're going to have to slow those rate hikes. And so just talking about slowing rate hikes is a sort of forward guidance to the market saying that they think maybe that they have tightened financial conditions enough, which is a, you know, like I said, a very big difference from where we were a month ago. To me, it's very reminiscent of Powell in 2018 when, you know, they raised rates to 2% and change. And he said, we're a long way from neutral. That was the June meeting that we just had. We're a long way from where we need to be in terms of where rates are now. Now they basically said, yeah, we're at neutral and we're going to be data dependent going forward, which is an all clear to markets that have been having to price in a more hawkish policy over the last few months.
Yeah, Jesse, it's really an interesting way that the Fed messages, because if you remember back to the 2018 that you just referenced, they were going to be data dependent back then. And then before the tapering started, when they were in 2020 and going into 2021, they were going to be data dependent then. And if people remember back in 2021, just last year, they said they weren't even thinking about getting ready to start hiking rates until 2023. But obviously they did. They thought inflation was transitory, but obviously it wasn't. They were going to do a 50 basis point hike 2 months back. And then they came out and leaked information to the Wall Street Journal that, just kidding, we're doing a 75 basis point. They said last month, to your point, that they're going to be super focused on fighting inflation and that they're going to get to neutral. And for them, neutral meant 3.5%. They had messaged that to the market. Several Fed governors had said that. And now they're backpedaling again and going back to data dependent. How could the markets be neutral when the CPI reading was just 9.1% and they're only at 2.25 to 2.5% Fed funds rate? Is that neutral? Because we heard from all these different economists that they were going to have to hike rates above the rate of inflation. Is that off the table now, Jesse?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. That was something that I think one of the first things I saw, in my Twitter stream during the press conferences, Mohammed El-Erian tweeted, this might be, a lot of times Jay Powell is too specific, and this is the problem with forward guidance, he said by suggesting they think they're now at neutral, that could be something that comes back to bite him, because with, a headline CPI at 9.1, 2.5% on Fed funds is still historically very, very loose. Very rarely have we ever seen the Fed funds rate this far below the rate of inflation, only during, very briefly during the 1970s. I think in 74, the Fed was cutting rates from 10 to 5% when inflation was running about as high as it was today. And that turned out to be a major mistake. And I think this is one of the potential outcomes that the stock market is not discounting right now, is that if it turns out that inflation doesn't come down in the way that the TIPS market and other things are suggesting, that it's going to come down rapidly. If it doesn't do that and the Fed starts to slow its rate hikes, it's going to prove that the Fed is still so far behind the curve in terms of inflation and has a ton more work to do. That's potentially, a few months down the road. But if that becomes, more likely and becomes more apparent to markets and starts to materialize, that's where you could see the next leg down for risk assets.
Now, isn't that something we do need to be aware of, is that if inflation stays high, the Fed actually might keep hiking, right? Everyone seems to be now discounting the fact that the Fed is going to keep hiking, or at least hiking at lower rates. I think even if they keep on hiking, we do need to understand that it is a different environment than the past decade plus, when rates were kept at zero and everyone just kept expecting rate cuts.
Yeah, it's a very different market. And I think this is what the market is trying to price in over the last, 6 months, beginning this year, is what type of environment are we in? Right. If we're in a persistently inflationary environment, you do not want to own equities. You don't want to own bonds. And that was what the first 6 months of the year was. Right. Markets going, oh, no, inflation is potentially out of control. We got to sell our stocks and sell our bonds. Now the markets are trying to maybe suss out the possibility that the Fed has tightened financial conditions enough to bring inflation back under control. I don't think that's likely, but that's what the markets are wrestling with right now. And of course, if inflation does come back down to 2%, then and it turns out that inflation truly was transitory, then maybe we are still in that type of environment we've seen for the last 10 plus years. But if inflation stays, well above the Fed's target, 2% target, then it's going to become more clear to, I think, investment participants, to the markets, that we are in a different environment. We're in a persistently high inflation environment, or elevated inflation, where inflation might, go through spikes and pullbacks. But when you average it over a number of years, the average is going to be well above the Fed's target. If that's the case, then investment portfolios have to shift in a major way. And it's not supportive of risk assets, financial assets generally.
Yeah, the Fed said last February and March that inflation was going to be transitory. I think that ship sailed a long time ago, Jesse. That's almost been a year and a half ago. So it's not transitory. Even if it comes down, it hasn't been just a couple of months of supply chain issues as the messaging was back then. But you mentioned that the tips market are signaling that maybe inflation will pull back down faster than people think. And you put out an article today that was titled Managing the Inflation Narrative versus Actually Managing the Inflation. I'd love you to maybe expand on your view of the tips market and how the Fed still plays a heavy hand in that market as well.
Yeah, well, you know, in the onset of the pandemic, right, the Fed announced some dramatic monetary policy moves. And one of those was a massive return to quantitative easing in terms of, you know, trillions of dollars. And I think what a lot of people don't appreciate is these market-based indicators of inflation expectations, essentially the tips yield, you know, difference from the, you know, regular nominal treasury yields. You know, people infer what inflation expectations are, you know, years and, you know, whether you're talking 5 years, 10 years, 2 years, you can look wherever you want. But when you're using tips to essentially analyze inflation expectations, you have to recognize that part of the Fed's quantitative easing, that those trillions of dollars of asset purchases were directed in the tips market. So the Fed went from being, you know, owning, I think, less than 10% of the tips market a couple of years ago to owning more than 25% of the entire tips market, which is a market that's a lot less liquid than the broader market for treasuries is, right? The market for treasuries even has been less liquid in recent years, but the tips market is even much, much less liquid. And so with the Fed controlling more than a quarter of the entire tips market, their buying has a huge impact on so-called real yields, market-based real yields. And so when they were buying up a bunch of tips, it made pushed real yields low, you know, negative, and made it look like inflation expectations were rising. And now that they are tapering, not just tapering, they're actually engaged in quantitative tightening. They're letting those assets mature and not repurchasing them. And who knows if they're actually selling tips. But even when you look at tips relative to the overall size of the portfolio, they were buying more tips, you know, actually allocating more to tips a couple of, you know, a year ago. And today they're actually letting tips roll off faster than regular treasuries. So that serves to make inflation expectations come down, you know, tips prices, you know, weaker than they otherwise would be. And so when you're looking at inflation expectations, which is a key component of this fight against inflation, right? The Fed says if inflation expectations become de-anchored, unanchored, that's one of the things that would make them very worried about future inflation. But even Jay Powell said today, you know, these break-evens, basically just, you know, 5-year break-evens, 10-year break-evens, inflation readings derived from the tips market are suggesting to him that inflation expectations aren't becoming unanchored. The problem is they're directly influencing the tips market. So, you know, they're basically writing their own report card in terms of how well they're doing in fighting inflation, which, you know, is kind of a joke, I think, in my mind. So I don't think you can look to the tips market at all to try and gauge what inflation is doing. But that said, if these markets are pricing in a rapid return to inflation, they infect every other asset price in the markets, from stocks to regular treasuries to, you know, everything, to especially precious metals prices, right? The gold price is very closely tied to tips prices. So the Fed is, you know, if it turns out that break-evens are pricing in a too rapid return of inflation, you know, back down, then, and that's what it looks to me like markets are kind of basing off of that, then there's going to have to be a repricing. And that, you know, could happen when it's clear that break-evens were too dovish.
So Jesse, where do markets go from here? And we can look at all this other data and we can really dive into what the Fed has said they're going to do. Fact of the matter is, it's very interesting movements on the back of this, I guess, slightly more dovish Fed. is that we saw everything move higher, including something like the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ stood out to me where it's up just for Wednesday, over 4%, really took a slightly softer Fed. And people, it seems like, continue to just go with that playbook of dump it into some of the riskier stocks. A lot of people on our side are saying, look, the gold, silver markets, they need to do better in a scenario like this. And while they did bounce, they didn't quite bounce to the same extent that the NASDAQ did. And quite frankly, the U.S. markets have been bouncing a little bit better than the underlying precious metal stocks. How do you balance out the market reaction?
Well, as part of this hawkish narrative that the Fed cultivated, through the June meeting, investors got really bearish on risk assets. And so one of the things that drives my short-term or shorter-term trading is investor positioning. And when you look at just the Commitment of Traders report, we saw record net short positions by non-commercial traders in equities. Even the small speculators in S&P futures got massively short over the last few weeks. And it's really hard to, even if you're bearish on the equity market over the next several years, when you see such crowding on the short side, it's difficult to maintain any short positions. What kind of confirms that is you look at the assets in leveraged short ETFs, right? So people are trading SQQQ, TQQQ, you know, these things like never before three times levered NASDAQ ETFs. The long version of that ETF gathered so many assets through the boom that it got so crowded on the long side that the unwind this year has been especially painful. But in the last couple of months, investors have been massively loading up on these leveraged short ETFs, as at the same time shorting S&P futures and a lot of it in Russell 2000 futures. And so I think the crowding on the short side in equities just got too big. And that was based on investors taking the Fed at their word that they were going to continue this inflation fight, come hell or high water, push financial conditions, you know, even tighter, which means pushing stock prices lower. Now, the Fed, Jay Powell just pulled the rug out from under those trades. And so this is probably a lot of, you know, short covering, I think, we're seeing in the market right now. But the same thing we saw in equities, we've actually seen in precious metals, too. You look at managed money positions in, you know, gold futures, and they're short for the first time since 2018. So very similar to what we saw a few years ago when people were getting very bearish on gold because they believed Jay Powell was going to, raise rates for the foreseeable future. As far as the eye could see, you know, people got bearish and started shorting precious metals. We're there now, too, with, in both small speculators and silver futures have their smallest net long position in 10 years. So everybody's given up on precious metals right at the time when Jay Powell's now saying it's probably safe to go buy them. And so I think it's a fascinating in terms of this positioning and catching traders off guard that I think we probably now see this. I think the short covering rally in stocks could last a couple of months before we see renewed selling into the fall. I think precious metals are probably forming an important low right here.
Yeah, Jesse, it's most rallies start with short covering rallies where the shorts get a little too over exuberant on the downside, usually at the exact wrong time when the retail piles in. And then that short covering rally in the general markets and the precious metals, even a lot of commodities today, almost everything is up except for the dollar and except for volatility. The VIX is down. So that just goes to show that, I guess, for right now, risk is back on the menu again. But we have another data point coming out. We don't have it at the time of this recording, but the GDP number should be coming out later this week. And Powell and the Fed have all mentioned that they're concerned about watching the labor markets. We're also seeing the housing market roll over. If we continue to see slowing growth, we don't know what the number is going to come in, but it's probably not going to break any records to the upside. So if we continue to see that slowing growth narrative and some other major markets rolling over, like labor markets, like the housing market, do you think that could change the narrative at all?
Yeah, I think it's kind of silly, this, you know, debate over recession, right? I mean, you know, everybody's talking about, okay, we might get two quarters of negative real GDP growth. That might mean recession. You know, I think that's just beside the point. I think, you know, and people are debating the definition of recession, you know, and it's just, I think it's just silly. I think the larger point to take from this is we went from an economic boom, right, where nominal growth exploded, nominal growth is still really high, to, you know, I think we're clearly in a stagflationary environment right now, with nominal growth is still really high, but it's just not as high as inflation, right? And so that's where you get the negative real GDP growth is people, all these, everybody thinks a recession means, well, growth has to decline in nominal terms. Maybe, I don't know how they, I mean, there's so many ways they define a recession. But I think that the bigger takeaway is that we are in stagflation right now. Inflation is elevated significantly, right? 9% headline. It's massive. When you, Larry Summers recently co-published a paper recently that adjusted the inflation numbers to basically make them an apples to apples comparison to what we saw in the 70s. And it either raises the inflation rate today by, you know, using real-time home price data, or you change the 1970s, 80s data by substituting owner's equivalent rent for the homeowner's data back then. Either way, when you look at an apples-to-apples comparison, it makes the inflation in the 70s look lower than it actually does, or today's inflation is really like 11, 12%. And so either way, the inflation we're seeing today is just as high as it was near the peaks in the 1970s. PPI is already at the highest level it was in the 1970s. So I think it's really clear that the economy not growing as fast as inflation, that's stagflation. That's where we are. I think inflation is going to remain elevated, challenging, you know, nominal growth, which would probably stay, you know, supported by jobs and things. But if we're in a persistently stagflationary environment, that's really all you need to know to make investment decisions. You don't need to know, you know, necessarily if we're going into a deep recession. I don't see that happening. I think that, you know, we're probably in just this kind of struggle along type of environment, and it could last for a period of time. And that's where the data says we're at right now. You don't have to know what a definition of a recession is or any of that stuff. And in stagflation, you want to own real assets. You want to avoid financial assets, you know, over the longer term. And I think it's pretty much plain as day right now.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up here. But again, I think your comments there is that we're going to be in with a pretty tough economy for a period of time. No one can put an exact date on that. It's been around for this whole year, and it looks like it's going to continue through the rest of this year. Again, it was a big week just hearing from the Fed, even though they came in very much according to expectations. But during the press conference, that is when we started to see that volatility. Jesse, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. It's always great chatting with you. We'll chat again in another approximately month. Thanks again for your time this weekend. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.